I'm Lily.
I'm Lorraine.
And we're caffeinated on the train. It's been a while since we've recorded a full episode.
Yes, the last episode we recorded, we were caffeinated in a hallway.
Sort of the same, but not...
It's related.
It's had the same ring to it, let's be honest.
No, I don't think we need to change the name of the podcast caffeinated in a hallway.
Hopefully we're also not that busy anymore that we need to be caffeinated in a hallway.
Right. Right now we are... I'm actually not caffeinated. I haven't had any coffee today.
Really?
Really.
What did you drink today at visit? You were at a cafe before.
Yeah, I just assumed. I had a juice.
Had a juice. Wow. Lovely. Lorraine, is this the new you? Is this the new improved Lorraine?
I wouldn't say
following.
Improved.
Recovering.
I'm in detox.
Yeah. Well, that I'm curious to know. I mean, if you remember, dear listener, Lorraine was working 40 hours a week and continuing school full time. How did that go? What are you detoxing from? Should I be concerned?
Not anymore.
Okay. Okay.
I have to say, the first 2 weeks, I felt really good. I mean, there were definitely moments when I was tired or I didn't feel totally on top of things, but overall, I felt really good. And then in the middle of the third week, I just...
Hit a wall?
I hit a wall. I lost energy. I was, like, emotionally worn out. Mm. Fortunately, I think Wednesday was the low point of that, and then Thursday was a holiday. Thank goodness.
Yes.
So then I met up with Lily. We went to a park, and after that, I was back on my feet. And then the fourth week was just so insanely busy. Like, it made all the other weeks look kind of slack.
Wow.
And this... So Monday, you know, I was working on all of these things. Tuesday, I just spent the entire day having technical issues. just nothing in the office was working. So that was a little frustrating.
Must have been something in retrograde.
I think...
How I explain it, all problems.
The whole universe was in retrograde.
Just like, sorry, you're not doing this
yeah,
today.
Yeah, yeah. So by the end of... By the end of Thursday night... So Thursday night was the hardest, or the final hard push. And I was just, like, tanked. I've spent the last 2 days sleeping, like, 12 hours a day.
That's unheard of for Lorraine.
That is unheard of for Lorraine. I do value sleep. I normally really try to get 8 hours. But for the last, like, 4 weeks, I've been getting 4 to 6 hours a night, basically.
Wow.
So I had a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. I'm glad you were able to do that.
Yes. Thank God today is a holiday too.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, what are you going to do with yourself now that you have an abundance of free time, even though you're going to school full time? I'm sure that...
Yes. Well, fortunately, in not 1 week, I'm going to be leaving for summer school.
All right. Wow. Life and times of Lorraine.
Life and times of Lorraine.
That's exciting, though, because I'm sure that's also just really fun.
Yes. I'm really, really excited.
Are you starting in Portugal or are you starting in Austria?
Portugal first. 2 weeks in Portugal, and then I fly from Porto to Graz, and then
Wow, that's lovely. Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous you're going to Porto. That's going to be really nice.
I'm very excited.
It's beautiful. Oh man, yeah, Portugal's amazing.
I've never been. I don't know anything about Portugal.
It's just really beautiful. I think that's the main thing.
Okay.
It's like a very beautiful, romantic... I've never been to Porto, but I've been to Lisbon, and I'd love to go to Porto. I think the food is also supposed to be really good. You'll have to let me know. You'll have to let us know on the next...
Follow-up episode.
Yeah, on your way from Porto.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's exciting, though. 4 weeks of... How are you going to manage with... I'm sure you've thought about this, but, like, how do you manage? Because you're going to be leaving a bit early from the semester as well to do this.
Yes. So I've informed... all of my professors that I'll be gone for the last 4 weeks.
They're probably just like, whatever,
yeah,
Germany.
Pretty much.
Okay.
For the ones with whom I'm writing term papers, I have my term paper topics already, so...
They know that you're not just leaving without considering...
Exactly. And I've been making a point throughout the semester to come to class and to be really engaged and talkative so that... no one's like, oh, she's just slacking off.
Yeah,
she's
no, it's like quite the opposite, actually. Speaking of which, like, when are they due? Before the end of this, or at the end of the semester break? When are papers, like, supposedly due?
Again, at the end of the semester break.
So, like, end of September?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
And by due, we mean...
due with air quotes. It's precisely what we mean.
Yeah.
The formality. Okay, but that's also, like, plenty of time. Yeah, cool. I'm actually really excited to be in the paper writing zone. I'm excited to have summer. I mean, I'm at the peak of being really happily busy and just wanting to be focused. Like, I find that I'm irritated by people distracting me from my studies.
You are quickly becoming one of those people in the German library who frowns.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
oh, someone's breathing too hard.
Shut up. I'm still going to yell at those people because I'm usually laughing because we're usually also messaging during my time in the library.
I'm not sorry.
I'm not sorry either. Like,
if those people only knew...
If they only knew, I think they'd be frightened mostly. I think they would just... They would be afraid to shush me, probably.
Right. And then you could have the whole library peacefully to yourself.
That's the ideal.
To laugh at Wyndham Lewis memes.
Maniacally. Yeah. Cackle. Yeah. But I'm really, like, so enjoying my life lately. Like, so... I feel like I'm not doing too much of any given thing, but I'm really challenged and happily engaged in everything I'm doing. Like, I really like my classes this semester, and it's well balanced, I think, with my two jobs, which are one, it's really one and maybe a half of a job. But I think I mentioned this before, dear listener, but I work in a cafe, and then I also babysit on the side. So it's just, they're all dynamic elements, but... Primarily, I'm just really enjoying what I'm studying, and I don't know. I feel like I have a good amount. I have enough free time. It's kind of, we talked about this, but I feel like I'm still managing to do. Last week, I went on a day trip to Potsdam and went to a Picasso exhibition, went to the Sanssouci Palace, which you would love.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's so nice. Good. And went on like a bike journey to all these historical sites around Wannsee. So anyway, yeah, I mean, I still feel like I'm having, but those times are more special, you know?
I think I've talked on the podcast before about my theory of high impact fun.
Yeah.
And that, like, a day trip to Potsdam,
so
a bike
gorgeous.
Tour around Wannsee, that's like the epitome of high impact
fun.
Yeah,
it was so,
where
yeah.
it's like bringing you joy and it's relaxing, but it's also making memories.
Yeah, and like doing things, I mean, you know, I'm still feeling engaged
exactly.
and excited about.
And it's the kind of thing
culture.
Where you'll look back at it in a couple of weeks or months and be like, I'm glad I did that instead
yes.
of staying at home and watching Netflix.
Yes, and I feel like my life still has these things in it, so that I don't feel like I'm just being kind of run to the ground and I have no time for friends or, you know, so I just feel like really balanced and really, and almost like being busy is making me balanced, I guess is what I mean. And that's, Lorraine is beaming, that's
yeah.
just, spending a lot of time with Lorraine, I think, around Lorraine. Yeah, and I feel like it's making me really aware of my priorities in a way that I think is really healthy. And, you know, being then aware of things that are not healthy for me as indicated by whether or not I'm able to keep dedicated and focused on my priorities. That's excellent. I don't know how to articulate that symbol, what I just said.
She just put her fingertips together and then kissed the tips of her fingers
and then
it
exploded. Like, you know, in Italian, is it? No, it's like when food is really good or something.
Right.
You're like, mwah.
But when you're Italian and food is really good.
Yeah, it's when you're Italian and food is really good. You know, Google that. busy. No, what were we saying? This is still in our section of what have you been up to last week.
Yes. I believe that you have an update from a thing that you were very busy on earlier in our podcast.
True. Something that I thought would never end. And then it came to a dazzling conclusion, a really good conclusion. And what we're talking about here, of course, is the Modernist paper. And yeah, last week, about 1 week ago, I got it back. I received it back from Andreas Mahler, our professor. And get ready for it. I got a one. Yeah.
Which, to be clear, for our listeners outside Germany, is the highest mark possible.
Yeah. And I knew I had done well because I love that. I don't know if it's probably the same for you, but he didn't reveal the grade.
Yeah, he was like
he
doing.
He made us go through, like, he made it, us both sit through all 35 pages of my paper. But I really, none of his, he didn't really have any major, like, a lot of his things were just how Germans, like, the difference between kind of technicalities of how I should. Which I feel like I'm going
to
forget.
Yeah. Well, he said things to me like, normally you don't bold your headings. And I'm like, this doesn't seem like a real comment.
These are like very
okay.
And there was like maybe a couple sections where, but he even like was on my side about space, like the amount of space that I had. But he was like, basically maybe in some sections I could have said things more explicitly or else could have expanded, but like not really because it was already really long. He understood that, which was cool. I felt like he was on our side and grading it. Like he was working with me and wanted my, you know what I mean? And I think that that's who you want.
Yes.
And he actually offered to me in this funny way. It was like, if you don't already have anyone that's in mind, like I would love to be your thesis supervisor. And
oh.
I was like, I mean, actually I think he would probably be who I would want to do it from the department anyway. So probably will happen, but that was really, it was such a good, and it was my first time writing a paper at this level in literature, maybe. I don't think I ever even did that in my undergrad, that I can remember. So anyway, yeah, it was just like, and I mean, that paper was an intensive experience at times. It was very overwhelming. I was working on it in Mexico, you know, there was a lot synthesized there, but I think in the end, I was able to pull it off, but you know what I mean, because it could have fallen flat of just like me being all over the place, but but it reflected in the paper, and he even said like he could tell that I had really researched extensively and executed my findings well. So yeah, that was awesome, and I'm feeling really good about it. And also last week, it was just a week of successes. The same day I also was accepted to this conference in Cambridge. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little like, shit, I actually have to. It's feeling when you get accepted, you're like, wait, damn it.
Now I have to write the paper.
Yeah, or else now I have to actually go back to the Dubliners and...
Yeah, oh, that's worse.
Yeah, a little bit worse. Like, I have to dig up that paper and actually do have to think about it again. And so, that's coming up in the horizon of things I have to do, preparing that. But, and on that note, I mean, maybe this is a good segue to talk about something that I think is a really... What we would like to discuss in this episode is our primary theme. We've been deciding like how to articulate what it is, but extracurriculars of graduate school.
Yes,
is I think what we decided on, which means you know, in addition to going to class, I think even more importantly, it's necessary if you want to have a career in academia or want to pursue a PhD that you're also doing these extracurricular things such as applying for or sending your abstracts to go to conferences, and also maybe trying to get involved in research projects, which is something else that I'm currently trying to do. More updates on that later, but yeah, that's our topic. And Lorraine is really good at this, and I've always admired that about her. So I'd love to hear how she approaches it. Yeah, take it over.
Oh gosh, thank you.
Yeah.
What exactly would you say?
No, it's, well, okay, let me start this. I would say for me, I've been out of school for a few years, and I've come back, and I have been aware, I'm not exactly sure how, but I know that it's important that you're doing these extra things, that you're having research experience, that you are going to conferences, that you have these things to add to a CV is to be a competitive candidate for a PhD, but I mean of course beyond just having it on your CV, I think these are important like things to have experience in doing, and so I knew that these things were important, but I didn't necessarily always know how to approach them, what they actually mean in practice, how to not only like to do them or that I need to do them, but how do I incorporate that in amongst all my other priorities of just, you know, the day-to-day stuff of being in grad school.
Okay, great. This gives me some
traction.
So the first thing I would like to say is that everything I learned about how to do academic-ing, I learned from The Professor Is In by Karen Kelsky.
Shout out! Yeah, I actually bought this book. I'm going to read it over the summer.
It's great. I've been rereading it.
Yeah, you mentioned that. That says something.
Yeah. I've reread it multiple times and
wow,
reread
cool. Sections.
Some parts of it like
okay,
over
awesome.
And over. I go back to it like a reference book. And what I learned from that, I mean, I've learned so many things about the expectations that aren't necessarily communicated to you.
Yes.
Especially in undergrad, they aren't communicated at all. And I went to an undergrad program that was really quite communicative and quite open to getting students involved in things like going to conferences and publishing and doing research assistant positions, but it wasn't necessarily clear to me when I was seeing those opportunities why I would do them.
Yeah, and how they keep aware of this bigger picture, mm-hmm. and yeah, understand the significance and then get from point A to point B.
Exactly. So what I've learned from Karen Kelsky and from other later academic input is that the currency of academia is publications.
Mm-hmm.
And anything else, like conferences and research positions, are ways of getting towards publications. So, like, a conference is useful in and of itself. It's like a good line on your CV. But its real value is to get input and to collaborate and to communicate with people in your field to move towards a publication. And similarly, research assistant jobs are good because they're a line on your CV, but more importantly, because you're talking to someone and working on the kind of research that turns into publications. So that's what I've learned.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a really good summary in terms of, because yeah, you hear these things thrown around a bit, but
mm-hmm.
understanding, yeah, what they mean and why you need to do them is, I think, a little less clear. Okay, so then that's thing number one. Thing number two is, how do you actually do these things in practice? Like, how do you, so I know I need to maybe try to go to conferences, or I know that it would be cool if I did a research position. So, like, what does that actually mean in practice for you? How do you incorporate that into your repertoire of things to do in a given week, for example?
For me, it's most important to know what's out there. And so that means subscribing to mailing lists and, like, checking out websites where people post calls for paper. And also following a lot of academic Twitter accounts.
Can you give some examples of these that you like?
Of
any of them. I think, how do you remember to comb these things? Where are you subscribing? Like, what are some general
So the first one I started subscribing to is, I think it's just called conferencealerts.com. And it sends out, like, a email every couple of weeks, or maybe every week, or maybe every month, a regular email listing what conferences are open.
So it helps you because it's coming into your mailbox. You don't have to necessarily spend time seeking it out. You can just review the email.
Exactly.
Okay.
Another one that I think is a little bit more related to my interests is called HNET, Humanities Net.
Okay.
And that's because all the conferences there are humanities related, whereas Conference Alerts is, like, very, very,
very broad.
Yeah. So I get a lot of alerts for, like, social sciences, which is, like, sometimes there's crossover, but often it's not really what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Twitter, which is where I feel like I find all the, like, really cool opportunities, I follow journals that I read.
Okay.
Or that I've been reading articles from. So, like, Representations is a very, like, big new historicist journal that I read from sometimes. So I'm following their Twitter account. Or, like, the Journal of Pre-Raphaelite Studies. Actually, they don't have a Twitter account. I found that out yesterday.
Unfortunately.
Sadly. But, like,
maybe you can manage their Twitter.
Maybe. They also look like they haven't updated their website.
Yeah, like, two people
maximum.
Make it three.
Yeah.
Lorraine's coming in hot.
I'm here.
And I'm hot. And also, being that we are a podcast, we can put this in our description of this episode, some of these.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good
some
idea.
Some of these links and references to get started. Because, again, like, I feel like I'm just starting to kind of get into the flow of this, and I am actually, like, wanting to take note of some of the things you're saying.
Yeah, okay, so.
So, yeah.
Instead of me saying a bunch of things, we'll just put links.
You can do both.
Okay. But I feel like I've said my main points. And then when I see a call for papers or something that's open, like, the moment I see it, I write down the deadline in my planner.
Yeah, so I've started doing this too. Like, especially, like, I really, like, I have lately, like maybe a Sunday off, and I take that time to be like maintenance for this extra stuff. And because it's also inspiring too, you know, it's like a different kind of engagement than, you know, getting really like, I don't want to say myopic because I feel like that's a negative connotation, but like, you know, reading close reading texts and doing my general assignments, like this is more big picture. It's more like, where do I want to go, and how do these, you know, it feels good too.
Exactly.
So I've been trying to now keep a document where I'm organizing when things are due, and okay, so I can do these two this week. I'll send these two abstracts this week, and then next week I'll do these two, you know?
Right.
And in my system, but you probably have a better system.
Well, I have my bullet journal, and I just put them in my calendar there.
Okay.
So that way I can see them in advance. I always have my bullet journal with me, so
that's true.
I check it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, I'm not usually looking at like multiple ones per week.
Okay.
For one thing, I don't have the budget to go to multiple.
Yeah,
conferences.
Honestly, now that I've started and I've gotten accepted to one, I'm like, okay, I can maybe do like one more this year.
Yeah.
It's probably
mm-hmm.
realistic.
And it depends on like where they are, of course, and how much the conference fee is.
How long the conference is, also matters.
Yeah, definitely. But like,
yeah, that's I'm learning this. Yeah.
You learn that fast.
So, which is also takes off some of the pressure, because if you're doing a couple conferences a year, like a small hand, I don't know how many you're doing, but you know, if I do this one and then maybe hopefully this other conference,
yeah,
that's already it makes it less overwhelming that like I don't need to send like 20 dozen abstracts.
That would be quite a
until
few
until I get accepted to one, you know?
Exactly.
But
yeah,
anyway, so
yeah, I think like two in a year is fine, especially
yeah.
because we also have conference type things at university.
Very true.
The other thing, and this is more of like a framing thing,
mm-hmm.
is that at this stage, I feel it's more important for me to put effort into these extracurricular things than for me to put in a ton of extra effort into class work.
Which is definitely a little bit of a paradigm shift, I would say, from maybe how you would approach your undergrad or how you'd approach the uni. Yeah, because this is something I'm learning, too. Like, these things are actually the most important.
Yeah.
More important than, like, a grade.
Yes.
A grade,
like, whatever.
Yeah.
Your grade isn't even, like, reflective of what you do in your class throughout the semester. It's reflective
yeah.
of your term paper at the end, which I would almost consider term papers to be more like these extracurricular research
another
projects.
Another step. Because as we've said in Lorraine, and maybe this is in the professor is in, but this kind of other element of the strategy, which is, I think, again, like you use these term papers as the building blocks for you to take to conferences. You know what I mean? Like it's nice if you, you know, unless it's a topic maybe that you're really, really excited to write about, it's nice to be like, I'm going to make this paper, or I'm going to approach writing this paper so that I can then use it to do the work for me instead of feeling like I need to now write all these extra papers from scratch for,
exactly.
you know? So,
yeah.
So that's a good way to, again, I think that's something that I'm really learning, is how do you be strategic with these things that you've done to make them do the work for you to do these other things that you want to do. It's
and
like a pretty important lesson.
This is absolutely a paradigm shift, especially from high school, but also from undergrad, because in that kind of context, you're writing this paper to prove that you understand something.
So true.
And by grad school, like, I don't think Andreas Mahler is sitting there, like, worrying that Lily doesn't understand modernism.
Yeah. Keeps him up at night. He was so relieved when he finally saw my neighbor.
Oh,
okay.
Thank God.
Thank God. I was very concerned about her.
Yeah. It's the work that we're doing now is not to prove to anyone, including ourselves, that we know what we've been taught, that we've gone to the lectures and internalized and can now repeat it.
Yes.
Like, no one cares.
No one cares. Yeah, that's so true. You're making some flashcards, memorizing some terms.
Man.
You better not be, honestly.
Make some Ezra Pound flashcards.
Yeah. People would be worried.
Yes.
Probably.
Be like, that's not a good use of your time.
No.
But, hey, I'm not here to judge how you spend your evenings.
That is not so far away from probably how I'm. I mean, how different are our Valentine cards, your Valentine cards from some
True. Those are basically Ezra Pound
flashcards.
Except that there's nothing on the back.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know. I don't know if you would want to use those as any kind of, like, factual. I'd actually hope that you wouldn't. Maybe this
what?
Is why we're getting a disclaimer. I mean, we're getting marked as explicit because the information that we're offering about these people are not things that you actually want anyone to be, like, retaining in any meaningful way. Except maybe in our book.
The vorticists.
Were they gay?
Yes.
Coming soon. Yes,
this
and
whole
300 blank pages.
No, yes, and then 300 pages of footnotes.
Fanfics.
Hot takes.
Yes.
This whole podcast is an elaborate marketing strategy for our upcoming book.
Publicity stunt, if you will.
Yes.
Making a splash.
You're in on it, dear listener.
You're one listener. Help us out. Throw us a bone.
We're going to sell one copy of this book.
Yeah. Put it on, make office hours, because there's going to be people lining up.
Right.
Confidence.
Anyway.
Anyways. I think that we're getting so far in that, like, it's hard for anyone to really even know what we're talking about. Like, I feel like the level of, like, context needed to understand what we're referring to at all these points is very high.
Maybe this is why we get fewer listeners on each subsequent.
We just, like, I can't follow this. I don't know if I want to.
I still don't understand who Wyndham Lewis is.
Yeah. Honestly, people really don't know. Like, even people that know about modernism, they still are in the dark about Wyndham.
I was at a lovely birthday dinner last night with a group of people from Transcreation, and midway through the dinner, it became me explaining Wyndham Lewis.
It comes up, man. It's if you talk to either of us for long enough,
yeah,
I don't want to tell you about Wyndham Lewis.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I was prepared to, like, just say one Wyndham Lewis fact and then stop, but people kept asking for more.
They wanted it.
That's who am I?
To cut people off from Wyndham.
Exactly. Why would I deny anyone
the chance to laugh about his antics?
About accidentally
going to transvestite bar. Yeah, that's why we're going to write our book. We're going to write our book. It's going to offer tons of hot takes. But, like, what is a book anyway today? We say it's just a day and age except for a bunch of hot takes.
What has a book ever been?
Honestly.
Wyndham Lewis's books were just his hot takes.
Definitely hot takes.
They were some
spicy as hell, those takes. Yeah. So who are we not to continue that tradition? We're just humble. I don't even... Fill in the blank. What are we? What are we? Don't answer that. Anyways, what were we supposed to be talking about?
How we find time to write abstracts.
Of course. How do we find time in the midst of all of
our... It's difficult.
Yeah.
How are we going to find time to advertise our book, The Vorticists, Were They Gay?
When we have so many abstracts to write.
I know! It's going to be a real challenge.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but hopefully we can also be writing our abstracts about the things that are interesting to us that we're already engaging in. That's maybe the takeaway we wanted to give about writing paper. That is actually what we were talking about on a serious note, is how you can use papers on a serious note. Are we ever serious?
No.
But yeah, how we can use the things that we're already doing as, like, kind of a points of leverage to then do these other things. Like, I think this is really a huge secret to, you know, feeling like you're seeming from the outside, maybe, like, you're really going above and beyond. It's just, like, being strategic and how you expel your energy.
Exactly.
So.
On that note, what are your plans for the modernist paper you wrote? What's the next step?
That's so true. I mean, because I honestly will say a lot of the conferences, and by a lot, I mean all, are really Lorraine sending me conference calls for paper that she's
call for papers.
Call for
CFPS.
Yes, that. Is there an apostrophe? Yes, it's CFP capitalized lowercase s.
Exactly. That is how I write.
That is actually how it's written.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually could do some more work. And it seems to be that when I say these things on the podcast, that the intention, it's like an accountability, or I end up doing it. So I think the thing...
Your listener is
magical.
Yeah.
You're going to say...
No, I'm not.
We're going to bleep this part out. I know what you... Yeah, you know that I know what you are... Yeah, so my next... I think the thing I could do more of or continue in this vein is to start... also getting in the routine of maybe subscribing to some mailing lists, following some things on Twitter that would be useful. But yeah, I think that paper definitely deserves to go to a conference. So I think probably I have my hands full. I'm with a few other things right now, but probably, like, once the semester's over, I will, like, work on an abstract for that and send it out to another conference. I think also in the vein of extracurriculars, in addition to conferences, unless, do you have anything else you specifically would like to say on this?
About conferences?
Yeah, and sending abstracts and conferences.
All I would like to say is that I am currently employed as a volunteer by progressiveconnections.net.
Very cool network of conferences.
Very cool.
I really like this one.
The one I went to in March, this was how I got involved. I went to a sex studies conference with them in March.
So your thing.
With a paper on Victorian porn. Obviously. That conference was like just the best conference experience I've ever had. Like, it was such a positive environment, and the people there were very inclusive and kind and thoughtful, but also academically rigorous. So great. So I now work as their social media and marketing person. So, dear listeners, I suggest that you check out their conference offerings. Soon there will be the calls for papers, the CFP lowercase s, for their 2020 conferences.
Excellent. So. Excellent. Yeah, yeah. I really second that, because it was a very, I mean, from all the ones I've seen from this year, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think they do a lot of, like, less traditional topics.
Their whole thing is interdisciplinarity.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a conference that's on, like, something that is specific to English studies, it'll be a topic that can go in multiple disciplinary
that's
directions.
That's really cool. And I think that that's one of the best elements of a good conference, is that you're hearing many different takes on one subject.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes they struggle a little bit with people seeing these topics and being like, oh, that's too broad. Like,
yeah.
Is this a real thing? Is this a real conference? They are absolutely real conferences. Is this a scam? Because that's like definitely a thing. Conferences that are scams is definitely a thing.
Okay, well, good to know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But Progressive Connections is not a scam. Unless it's like a really, really elaborate.
Yeah, maybe.
It's so much of a scam that it's just real.
Yeah, seriously. They even have a social media coordinator.
Yeah, they put on actual conferences just as like a way of tricking
just to trick
people.
You. Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe, I mean, who am I to say?
I just wanted to like give a shout out to them.
Yeah. They deserve it. I'm hoping to hear back soon about a conference I applied to.
Hopefully by the end of this week.
Yes. Yeah, I'm really excited about the paper, which I'm also writing for a class. So, perfect example of what we've been discussing. Another thing that I have coming up is that I am applying for a research assistant position in a class that I love, which is rationalities and practices of surveillance, and it's kind of getting back to my roots in sociology, and it's very theoretical, and the professors are both amazing, and one of them, Professor Dr. Laura Viola, is doing a pretty large research project, and she's looking for a new assistant, so guess who's applying?
It's Lily.
It's me. So that's something that I'm working on currently. The whole shebang. I had to write my own letter of recommendation and have the professor review it. I've never done that before, but apparently that's more common than I realized. I've talked to a couple people about it, and they're like, yeah, I've had to do that. So I don't know. But that was a new thing I've never done before. Got good feedback from the professor who was willing to put his name on it. So
great.
So cool. Now I'm working on the cover letter, which is an art in itself, I would say. It's like the classic thing where you want it to be within a certain, like, I feel like that's kind of what they want you to, it's almost a skill you're trying to demonstrate, is that within this amount of space, one page, I can make a cohesive, like, presentation of my qualifications for this position, but also particularly for this position, not just like a generic thing, you know, and how do I frame this in a way that builds a narrative of my accomplishments or of the things that make me a good candidate. I mean, it's definitely like it's a small amount of text, but it's definitely a lot of thought needs to go into it. And that's what I'm currently working on in addition to my CV, and it's all due tomorrow. So yeah. But I feel okay about it. I feel like the conceptual work is done. It's more of just like reworking the paragraphs so that they're more concise and succinct, which is a doable goal. Yeah, that's pretty much it. But I think that's another side or another aspect of what we've been talking about. And through the research position, there's also conferences that I think we are going to, or workshops and conferences. And yeah, ideally, I think there's a lot you can do with it. That's up to you, and hopefully maybe even be part of the listed on the people who, and I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know exactly what my level of like in the publication would be, but maybe in somewhere they give me a shout out.
Yeah.
So that'd be awesome.
That's
reasonable
to expect depending on what exactly they're producing and at what stage and like how long you're in health. Yeah,
yeah.
I think there's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah. That would be excellent.
Good luck, Lily.
Thank you. Hopefully I will know within the next few weeks what the deal is there. I don't know. Do we have anything else to say on the topic of extracurriculars? I think that we'll probably, our plan is maybe to get into some of these things into like a more depth.
Yeah.
And more like kind of concrete.
I'd like to think just a little, do a little like brainstorming about some things that you can do that are extracurricular besides applying to conferences. Because I feel like that's something I'm very comfortable doing. I'm at this stage really comfortable sending abstracts to conferences.
Yes.
In fact, like so comfortable that I think I kind of need to stop doing it.
Yeah, because as we were saying, there's a limit to like feasibly how many you can...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as I said, conferences are not actually like the ultimate currency.
Yes.
So it's, for me, I feel like the next step is to start sending things out for publication. Like in journals.
Yes.
And I feel like that's a lot scarier.
Yeah, that's a frontier that I don't know.
For one thing, for that, I mean, at least at the journals that have submissions of and that I've looked at, you have to send like the actual paper instead of just the abstract.
Which is, yeah.
As we know, Lorraine writes her abstracts first and it's like a teaser trailer. And she may or may not
write the paper after.
Right. Depending on whether it gets accepted.
Yeah, it's so true, so true.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, if you have to send the whole paper, you have to have done that work up front.
Yeah, definitely.
And I also feel that that's a stage where, again, there's a lot of imposter syndrome. Like,
truly.
Am I allowed to submit
the paper? Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even have my master's degree yet.
Yeah, so true. But again, I mean, I think it's really the same with any of these things where it's a matter of just like, I think that a good approach that I've been kind of, adopting with all these things is like, if nothing else, is good practice.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and I think that can help you to shift the imposter syndrome. So you're like less, things are less predicated on like whether or not you're good enough or worthy enough to be doing this thing. It's more just like, I'm just going to do it as practice and not really think in these like terms of like, who am I and what is, and then you will probably be surprised. That's what I'm realizing. Like, I was just going to send out some abstracts to practice doing it. And turns out I was accepted to a conference. So
at Cambridge.
It's probably the same thing. Thank you.
I mean, that's pretty cool. It's not
it actually is.
Nowhere.
It actually is. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think that's an important element of all this too, is like, how do you get your feet wet and how do you kind of get over the obstacle of starting?
Yeah.
Which I think is a big thing in any aspect of grad school, from writing a paper in the first place to, you know, pursuing these like kind of goals or objectives outside of what is exactly required of us to do. So I think it's probably the same. It's just like, throw it out there and start seeing what works, what doesn't, and what feedback you get.
Yeah. The strategy that was recommended to me when I took a workshop on academic writing at a summer school last summer was that when you have a manuscript that you feel like could be published, you should make a list of all the journals that it would be cool to have it published in, starting with the most like prestigious and then going down. And then you should send it to the most prestigious one. And then if/when you get your rejection letter back, you make any edits that they recommend, and then you send it to the next one. And you just keep doing that until someone takes it.
Yeah, then I feel like your odds are pretty good if you take that approach.
I think so too. So, dear listener, this is what I'm planning on doing with my modernist paper, which did not get a 1, but did get like a 1.7.
You wrote it in a day.
Also. That's a main factor.
That is worth mentioning.
And I did legitimately a lot less research than Lily. It's like a much more off-the-wall kind of paper. I wrote a manifesto in the middle of it.
Just
an average day.
That really is an average Lorraine situation.
Truly, writing a manifesto. Not a day goes by when I don't write a
manifesto.
This whole podcast.
What else is it but a manifesto?
An auditory manifesto. Marinetti would love it.
Yeah, he would. He really would.
But I feel really good about what I did in that paper. And that's what I plan to do.
Maybe I should also try to publish that bad boy.
That bad boy.
bad boy.
Like
Percy.
I feel like we had two different interpretations of calling it a bad boy.
Me too.
There.
Me too. Definitely. Definitely. Both apps are both valid interpretations.
Yours was definitely more like the dog that peed on the carpet.
Also, what else is he but the dog peed on the carpet? Honestly. You know, it's true. Yeah, I mean, you're right, though. Maybe I should also try doing the same. Maybe we can, like, suss out exactly what that would look like in practice.
I think we should do that. I think
there's probably some similar journals we could send it to as, like, modernism.
Yeah,
modernism.
Absolutely. I think we should...
Maybe, like, go to a cafe and...
Once the recording's over, let's harden up the details on this a little.
Yeah.
This is something that I think would be really good. And we could record our journey.
Yeah, like how it goes, what happens.
1 year later, we both get rejection notes.
Yeah. Seriously. And she's like, oh, sentence. It's like, nice try. No, what did Mussolini say? Entertaining?
How entertaining.
Yeah. That's all that's written.
At Cantos XXX.
Yeah.
Which just meant 30.
Sure did, right.
Sure it did.
That's just, yeah, that was the cover. Before he was put into an insane asylum.
This is Ezra we're talking about,
yeah,
to be
of course,
clear.
To be clear.
It could be Wyndham.
Could be Wyndham.
But it
Wyndham
wasn't.
Wyndham wishes. That he, yeah.
Wyndham sent his poetry to Mussolini and got no response.
No response. Still pending response. Nothing. Yeah. yeah, pretty much. But yeah, let's really do that. What else? Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say in this subject of extracurriculars. And I do think we should maybe break down and dedicate further episodes to getting into the, like, nuts and bolts of these.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's definitely a really important element of being in grad school outside of just, like, how classes are going or these kind of writing term papers, as we've discussed in the past.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, should we turn it over to the final segment, which is what we've been reading this week?
Let's do that.
All right. As we look nervously at the book that I am supposed to be reading right now. Well, not right now, but, like...
Right this second.
Yeah. Although, technically, like, is there ever a time that I'm not supposed to be... Anyways, we're in a class on... it's post-colonial literature class called Writing Australia, and I have my presentation on a day that is... unclear. Surprise. It's like it's part of the hype of the class. It's just like you don't know when your presentation is.
It's true.
It could be this week, could be in 3 weeks. Stay tuned.
Yeah, legitimately, I felt so bad. There was one girl in the class who she was all ready to go, and the first presentation just went so long that they didn't get to her. And then the next week there was supposed to be a movie screening in class. Which neither of us went to.
It didn't happen?
No. So hers is going to be this coming week. I feel...
But we didn't even watch the movie?
You and I didn't watch
the
movie.
We wouldn't watch it, but the class did.
The class watched the
movie.
Okay.
It's like, what
both of
do?
Us were doing other things.
Well, I didn't even know what I was doing, but I wasn't there. It's true. It was really hot. I do not do well in the heat, dear listener. Just so you know, I don't know.
Right.
In case you see me and it's hot, take care. I'm not doing well. Anyway. Okay, yeah, that's sad. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
It's frustrating. And then it's, yeah, and to start, like, the syllabus, the days were all wrong on the syllabus from day one.
Yeah.
And then it's just, yeah, I think sometimes we get, like, ahead and sometimes we're behind. It's really difficult to say exactly, like, when. But
these
anyway,
are the kind of stone-cold call-outs that...
Yes. Yeah, so I'm not going to name names, but...
But it's Professor Lackey.
Yeah, it is him. There it is. LQ. anyway, so I'm reading right now Voss by Patrick White for my presentation on spirituality as represented in the book. I don't really know yet how that's going to go, what that's going to mean, but Yeah, I'm keeping my options open. I'm still probably going to do my paper and material term, but, like, maybe I will, during this time, get the inspiration to stay in something. Because, in theory, I mean, I really like this book that I have. I'm also reading The Poetics of Imperialism, which is actually written by a professor at Cornell that I, one of my, like, biggest regrets from my undergrad is that I just didn't, I didn't need to take this class, and I needed to, like, finish my degree, so I didn't get to stay in class, but he, his specialty or his area of focus is on North American Indians, indigenous people. I don't really want to say Indians. Yikes. I'm reading one of his books right now, and I think it kind of pairs well with what we're doing in this class. And one of the main themes that's striking me is this kind of subject of how written literature in the kind of traditional sense is itself definitely, like, very Western and kind of excludes or creates, like, a system of, like, what we privilege as being legitimate forms of art or cultural expression that, because it's written, and how that in itself is sort of, like, into the means of production or a thing that is controlled by a certain group of people and excludes others. So I'm interested in kind of maybe potentially doing something in this vein. And that's also a critique that we've been saying of this class while we're at it.
Yes. While we're at the Stone Cold call-out post, this class has not, I think I said when we were chatting before we started recording, there are multiple directions in which this class is just not going very far.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a flop.
It's not going very far in breadth of types of topic, because all of the books we read are sort of long 19th century settings,
yeah,
about the interactions between early Australian settlers and Indigenous people. And undoubtedly, very important topic in Australian literature, but potentially not the only one.
And also, I don't think that any of these is necessarily doing the topic complete justice. I know we've discussed that there's challenges because there isn't so much, again, because this form of writing, I think, is itself very much emblematic of the divide, I think, between, like, Aboriginal people and the way that they express and pass down narratives and the way that, like, the Western settlers do it,
yeah,
which is, you know, so if we want to stick to a traditional, like, kind of literary medium. But at the same time, I do think that we could have engaged or at least kind of touched on or looked at examples of oral tradition, song, and I'm sure that there are documentaries and things we could have looked at.
Yeah, we have only read novels. We haven't even read short stories,
poetry,
plays, transcriptions. We haven't watched any movies. We haven't read any nonfiction.
It's I think in itself it's sort of ironic, is how I would say, because we are critically, like, kind of touching on this subject, yet where we are ironically, like, looking in a very traditional way at this subject.
Exactly. And the way that the class is structured is also very traditional German academia.
Yeah.
In which people give presentations about core themes in the books, kind of in, like, not even in, like, overly post-colonial theoretical lenses.
No,
sort of in, like,
they're just, like, pretty, what's the word? It's, like, topical.
Yeah.
Themes.
I'd say, like,
they're not, I don't know.
I wouldn't even call it, like, a new critical lens that we're using.
I just, like, I don't know. I think that they could be more, much more critical.
Yeah. It's a sort of intellectually underwhelming setting.
Yeah.
In addition to being a very limited set of texts.
Yes. And, like, yeah. So it's been a topic that I think could have been very, like, stimulating and the chalice. Just a topic that I think could be really stimulating and really interesting, and because it's serving up the opportunity to do something that's very non-traditional and very creative, I think, with the class and with our participation in the class. And so I think we've all been feeling a little bit disengaged, to be honest. So I'm trying to get through this book, but I need to do about 200 pages a week, I would say, I think to feel comfortable with. But I mean, that's like 30 pages a day of a novel. It's actually not that bad. It's really not that bad.
What a long book, though.
It's so long. Why is this the one I'm doing? It's so long. I didn't
yeah,
know.
That was silly.
Yeah. But anyway, 30 pages, like, it's manageable, but. But yeah, there, here we are. That's what I'm up to reading-wise. Also, this other book that I mentioned. Yeah. I would say I'm going to stick to those two. I mean, obviously, there's other texts that for school, but yeah.
Can I talk about my idea for a term paper for this Australian
course. Yes, yes, yes. Which I think is a really good example, by the way, of doing what I think this class could have done.
Thank you. The idea that I had for the term paper, because as may be abundantly clear, we have not been overly inspired by the books that we're reading. So my idea was, instead of doing like just a literary analysis of one or more of these books, to propose a museum installation that would tell this story that we keep getting about the early contact between English settlers and Indigenous Australians through a less novel-y type of narrative, incorporating Aboriginal forms of storytelling and or less hegemonic Anglo-centric ways of constructing narratives.
Yes, I love that. I think that's really what this class should be about. I think it's a really awesome idea, and that is actually what is making me consider maybe staying in this class and just trying to come up with a more like kind of creative way of taking it that's exciting and interesting, and maybe sort of doing like what I wish this class had done.
Exactly.
And yeah, so maybe side note again, I would also love to maybe consider, I think I'm hoping that reading this book will at least get the juices flowing, because honestly I've been just really like having a hard time even following at times the class, like what's going on, like again with even little logistical things like the schedule. And yeah, so anyway, I'm hoping that maybe reading this book will get me inspired too, because it could be like, I think this paper that you, it sounds like it'll be really fun to write, actually.
I think so too, and it'll incorporate my interest in museum pedagogy and in public history.
Yeah.
I could see, this is just like an idea,
I could see
us doing very complementary papers.
Yes.
Where you have this more like theoretical and sociological approach, and I have a more output-focused proposal.
I love that. Yeah, because I think that there are a lot of ways. Yeah. Let's be in touch about this. I'd love to talk, because I think it could be. And my initial idea was maybe to use some stuff from the theories of the material term, in terms of, because I think there's something like a really nice post-colonial thread that you can take from the new materialisms that I think would be, could again be like also kind of, for me, like manifesto-y feeling of like, yeah.
I'm just trying to get us to write manifestos.
Yeah, that's her constant agenda, guys.
Yeah,
if you know Lorraine, she's just trying to get you to write a manifesto. Beware.
It's a true fact.
She's just out there, yeah.
Prowling the streets.
Yeah, for people, innocent bystanders who look like they could be victims of manifesto writing.
I feel like that's a much more productive thing than what Ezra and Wyndham did, where just they wrote
prowling
manifestos,
yeah,
and then prowled the streets
prowling,
trying to get people to sign them.
A lot of that.
So much skulking.
Skulking. Slinking.
Ezra was a prowler. Wyndham was a skulker.
Definitely. Definitely. Pod bottom, liquid top. You know, it's clear.
Another
yeah,
classic.
Another classic. Classic Lily and Lorraine right there. Yeah. I think that's a great, I think that's really exciting, and I'm feeling a bit inspired to potentially. Because again, I mean, I think even taking this thread of like what I wish this class could have been could be a good way to orient writing a paper for it.
Well, that was also my inspiration for the modernist papers. Gosh, what I wish we had talked about in this class.
Yeah, let me talk about it in my paper.
Yeah, exactly. And
now you're forced to read it. All the doors locked. This is another classic joke of ours.
The door is locked. The windows
trapped.
Are barred. But I think this is one of the really great things about the German system is that there's really, they can't stop you from writing a paper on
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, they have to read it.
Yeah.
And you can make it really, like, because, I mean, maybe there's ways that I could even do, like, they love a good comparative analysis, that I could do a comparative analysis between maybe even the ways that, these things are handled in Australia versus how they're handled in, say, the US or Canada. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. But, yeah, there really are many ways you could take it. As long as it's, like, vaguely related, they can't stop you.
Exactly.
Honestly, would they stop me if I just turned in blast? Like,
no.
Lucky would be reading it for a while before he was like, wait a minute.
Sounds familiar. I don't think she wrote this.
Wow, it's so pink. Is that sans serif?
Is this 1-inch margins?
Yeah, he starts writing me a strongly worded. You did not use 1-inch margins here. Your text is not aligned. That's all you have to say.
Yeah. 1.7.
Yeah, honestly. I could totally see him doing that, like, pause. 1.7. Cool.
Yes, okay. So,
anyways,
there are some thoughts on Australian lit.
Yeah, another thing we'll have to update our dear listener on soon.
She'll love it.
Yeah, she will. Hi, Ruth. Hoping.
Shout out to Ruth. Have you told Ruth that you're going to be...
No, actually I have not. Yeah, I have to.
Lily,
she'll love it. Oh, yeah, she's going to fall off her chair. Yeah. Aww. Oh, Ruth, can't wait. I hope that this isn't how she finds out.
Yeah, probably not.
No, probably not. Probably not, let's be honest.
This is not going to be up before Wednesday.
No.
I mean, it might be. We'll see.
Also, like, how many people are still following along here?
I think 7.
7? Okay. I mean, I have no expectations, so anytime anyone's like, yeah, listen to your podcast, I'm like, wait, really?
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't even listen to it because I'm doing it.
I listen to it.
I've listened to them. Actually, no. Let me take that back. What I do is I listen to them because I've been editing them. Mm-hmm. Once they're published, I'm not listening to it again. Because that's like a lot. That'd be like kind of an excessive amount of times. That'd be like...
I listen to the ones I don't edit.
Doing it. Yeah, me too. Me too. But I've just been editing them.
Yeah.
So if I'm like doing the podcast, like speaking in the podcast, editing it, and then listening to it a third time.
That would be a lot.
It's like, what am I? I must really like the sound of our voices. Which I'm not saying I don't, but...
We make great jokes.
We do. I'm actually content with the output.
I think this is fantastic.
Same.
I'm going to edit this part out.
Yeah,
where we just talk about how great we are.
Windham and Ezra would leave that in.
Windham and Ezra. That's us.
Yeah, that is us. We're slowly becoming them. If I'm slowly becoming Lorraine, we're slowly becoming Windham and Ezra.
Slowly?
Slowly. Are we? Pulls off. I have a huge hat on. Your hair is so fluffy. It's insanely fluffy. How does it, what even is that hairstyle?
It's bouffant.
It's just bouffant. It's even... Sorry. I don't know. Yeah. Are you sure you're going to cut this out? Yeah. This is what actually happens a lot. The challenge when I'm editing it is that, like, we're talking about nothing of importance and then we're making a funny joke. Where do I draw the line? It's an important question.
Maybe I'll just hard cut from, like, when we were legitimately talking about things.
Us making funny jokes.
Do you think pulls off mask?
Yeah.
I'm wearing.
I'm pretty sure that I did that in the last one. Because you were going on a lot of tangents and then suddenly we made, like, a really funny joke about Foucault or something.
Right. There was definitely.
There's just something, like, a sharp transition that didn't make. It didn't, like, not make sense, but you could maybe kind of tell that there was something missing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There was definitely something missing.
Kind
that was the episode
turn.
Before last.
Yeah.
Ha! Now our listeners will go back and re-listen.
Yeah, find all the mysteries.
Try to guess what we were talking about in that.
This is a small repertoire of things we were probably talking about.
It wasn't one of our normal topics.
No, actually, really wasn't at all. It really wasn't at all.
This will be challenging.
Report
this
back.
Can be a great opportunity for content engagement. Leave us a comment. Leave a review with 5 stars and your guess about what we were talking about.
And then share it on the social media platform of your choice.
Yes. We're not on LinkedIn.
We are not on LinkedIn. That'd be off-brand, honestly.
I think we should make a LinkedIn page.
Yeah. I honestly, when I was a youth, I was like an unofficial performance artist. I've always been interested in sociology. I just always was curious about like being in context and just like doing something really nonsensical in them. Like I used to wear costumes in times when it wasn't necessary or appropriate to.
I love it.
And another thing I was always really interested in like social media norms and just doing weird things. I had a Facebook group with my friends called Shh, It's a Secret. And it was just a group that was dedicated to, no one knew, there was no secret, but it was like everyone, there was like, we'd always be alluding to secret. We would just invite random people that we all knew. And then like sometimes like try to get them to fight in the comments. Like, be like, we'd tag them and be like, you know what she said about you? And then people, it would be people that would either really get the, would be on our level, or people that would be completely not on our level. And so we would just like throw them into the ring together and like, it was great fun. We had a lot of fun on here. Just total nonsense. But like, it was all acting like these things were something that they just maybe didn't know about, but it was a thing. But it was not, none of it was, it was just bravado.
Did you get a lot of Canadians in there?
Probably, yeah.
Pretending that we knew what was
they would
on.
Really help carry it. You know, if I had known that statistic, it would have been useful.
Have we said the statistic on the podcast?
No, I went to a talk, which is something else that we meant to incorporate more into the podcast or somewhere.
Yeah.
Some in one of our projects that we have a lot of projects in the pipeline. One of them was that we wanted to review or discuss talks that we've been to. And I went to one on Canadian nationalism, which was really interesting. But at one point, the professor, Canadian, at the end of his presentation, which I thought was cute because he had just given his hot takes, very Canadian, like, you know, kind of making fun of himself. But what he said is that in a study that was done of people, I think it was in the U.S., Canada, and Europe, they introduced to people on the street, I think it was, like just random people, topics that didn't exist or concepts that didn't exist, and asked the people in each country or each area, Europe's not a country, which whether or not they could explain or whether or not they knew about these concepts. And Canadians were the ones most likely to pretend that they knew about topics that didn't exist and just pretend they knew what they were talking about when they absolutely did not.
It's so real.
And I just giggled because Lorraine oftentimes says this about herself, that maybe she's just full of bravado and confidence. But
she
just
never knows what she's talking about.
But could have fooled me. Could have fooled us all. As Canadians do.
As we do.
As they do.
Yeah.
Also applies to Wyndham, honestly.
Truly.
Just hot takes sold as real, real facts.
He was pretty sure he knew what was going on.
And totally didn't, because he was talking about things that were made up most of the time.
Right.
So, you're just continuing the lineage. You're just passing, the torch was passed to you to continue your cultural
exactly.
heritage.
Anyone who says that I should stop talking about things I don't know about is disrespecting my Canadian culture.
Yeah. Can't have that.
No.
Rude.
Anyway.
Anyway.
So, actually, I have been reading a Margaret Atwood book.
Which one?
Hagseed.
I don't know that one.
I'm reading it for this class on the Hogarth Shakespeare.
Okay. So she wrote, okay.
Yes.
Cool.
She wrote, and what I keep saying to people is that this, out of all of the books that I've read for the Hogarth Shakespeare series so far, this is by far the most resembling an actual book.
What does that mean?
Well, out of the, I've read four of the Hogarth Shakespeare books, plus Hagseed. So that's five.
Okay.
Four plus one is five.
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
Gotta keep sharp on your math skills.
As an English major,
yeah.
I do.
Basic addition that you could do with your hands.
Exactly. out of all of them, other than Hagseed, all of the ones I've read before Hagseed, I would only say that one of them was good.
Mm.
I would say that two of them were really quite awful.
Wow, okay.
And even the one that was good, I think I only like because it's related to a lot of things that interest me and in a style that I find interesting. And it would still not make any sense if you weren't interested in those topics and in the play that it was based on, which was The Merchant of Venice.
Yeah, that's a great point. They can't stand up on their own.
Exactly. Whereas I feel that Margaret Atwood's does stand up on its own.
Cool.
It's like a functional narrative.
Cool.
I'm about to do some more stone-cold call-out posting about this class.
Yes.
We started with, I think what was probably, it was definitely the worst one that we've read in the class,
okay.
And it's possibly the worst one, because the one that I read outside of class was also really shockingly bad. I think
wow.
I talked about this one on the podcast.
Which one was it?
Dunbar.
Okay.
I remember talking about tragedy.
Every time,
yeah.
I remember you talked about Vinegar Girl.
Yeah, Vinegar Girl was also a functional narrative. It's just
okay.
that the narrative was like not
that
great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we started out with The Gap of Time by Jeanette Winterson, who I'm told is a really good author. But The Gap of Time is a really bad book.
So you be the judge.
We all have bad days. It's fine.
We all have bad novels.
We all have bad novels. But the class started out talking about that, and we were like very negative about it, which was great. The class
it
was
can
like
be fun,
so engaged and like pointing to specific things and like, this is a problem because of this. This doesn't make any sense. This is like emotionally tepid. These characters are flat. This is like offensive.
This is so many things.
So many things. So that was the sort of energy that the class started out with. And I feel like we've wanted to keep that kind of negative call-out energy up, even though the rest of the books have not been as bad. And I really felt it with the class discussion on Hagseed, because I think Hagseed is actually like a fairly decent book, or at least like a functional book.
Yeah.
And I felt like people were being really reflexively negative and looking for things to complain about. And that was just a little, it was a different kind of class dynamic than what I normally complain about. I normally complain a lot about people in classes pretending that they like texts that are actually garbage, like The Complete Works of Ezra Pound.
Great example.
Exactly. And so it was interesting to see from the other side that people can also get locked into the same kind of thought processes or the same kind of feedback loop in a group environment in this other way.
Yeah. I can absolutely see how that can happen.
This was quite the tangent, but that's what I've been reading.
So, yeah, okay. All right. So you think it's a pretty good book, functional book at least.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's like mind-blowingly fantastic. There's a bunch of parts with rap. Which is like
Lorraine and rap are two things that maybe
I mean, it's Margaret Atwood writing rap.
Margaret Atwood and rap are two things that might
exactly.
Canadians and rap.
Hey.
Do you have rappers?
Drake.
Okay.
And do you know that like rap reggae song Informer?
No.
From like the 90s? Link it in the comments. That's by a Canadian. It was like a big one-hit wonder. It was like famous. I heard it in a cafe recently.
You heard it.
And I was like, my boy!
People. Yeah.
The rapper was named Snow.
Of course it was.
Yeah. Anyway. We have two Canadian rappers.
Two Canadian rappers.
Maybe more.
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
We
should have
corrected.
Drake should have done the lyrics
for our podcast opener.
Yes.
Let's write up.
Dear Drake. Your fellow Canadian calls upon you.
You can't say no to that. I'm sure that you work this way.
It's against the Canadian code of ethics. It would be rude.
Yeah. Would be. Can't be rude.
Exactly.
Can't be rude in Canadian.
Right.
Revoke your citizenship. Yeah.
Right, which is why I've never been rude to anyone in my life.
In your entire life. That's actually true. I've never seen you be rude to anyone in your entire life.
Right. Especially not poets who are dead.
No. Absolutely not. That's rule number one, really. Yeah.
That's like when you're born and they're about to fill out your Canadian birth certificate. They're like, have you ever been rude to anyone in your life? And you're like,
Wait, Lorraine, why did you move from Canada? Why aren't you living there anymore?
I'm going to edit this part out of the podcast.
Being rude to dead poets? Lorraine! Lorraine!
Lily!
Would I? Who, me?
Who, me? Rude to a dead poet?
We're so weird. We are so off the wall sometimes.
I feel like this is an especially off the wall episode because we haven't recorded in a while.
We haven't recorded in a while, except for once in a hallway, but it was a different energy.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's pretty much, that's all I have to say.
We have long
on that
since
note. We've overstayed our welcome into your headspace. Honestly, apologies.
I was looking at the time, and it was like 23 minutes, and we'd almost said everything, and I was like, wow, this is going to be a really short episode.
Yeah, me too, actually, and then here we are.
Hour and 10. It might still be, like, on the shorter side, because that one we recorded last time we were here was, like, 2 hours, right?
Yeah. They cut a lot of stuff out.
Yes.
So anyway, on that note, I will leave you to it, whatever you're doing now. I hope that it goes well.
Good luck, dear listeners.
Yeah.
The next time we record...
I don't know when that will be.
It's going to have to be before I leave for summer
school. Yeah, let's do another one before you go.
So the next time we record will be very soon, and you won't get to find out what we talk about.
Probably not. All these things that we set you up, all the suspense.
We're not going to talk about any of it. It's a great misdirect.
Okay.